crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered together to him, and he was by the sea, and behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet. And he begged him earnestly, saying, My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands upon her, that she may be healed, and she will live. So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. We live in a world of suffering and a world of pain. We live in a world where there's heartache and injustice, where people suffer tremendously all around us. And yet, we live in a world that was created by a loving God, a just, compassionate, concerned God. And those two things seem so incompatible, so different from each other. How could we live in a world that God created, a God who loves us, a God who is concerned and caring, yet a world that is filled with suffering? I remember the first time that I saw a truly deformed child. And it was when I was working in the hospitals and I had to x-ray a hydrocephalic child. And the child's head was twice the size and weight of the child's body. And I thought to myself, Lord, I don't understand. Lord, you're a God who's concerned and a God who's loving. I don't understand why the suffering and the pain, especially of the innocent. And this is the point that people challenge God on all the time, isn't it? How could a God of love, if he's really a God of love, allow this to happen? Allow those people to be born that way? How could a God of love allow so-and-so to get into that accident, or my loved one, the calamities that have happened in their lives? Why would a God of love do that? And they're always challenging God because they see the seemingly inconsistent nature of God. But you know, the Bible says that the sun shines on the just as the unjust, and the rain beats on the just as the unjust, and that there is suffering and that there is pain, but yet God is concerned with suffering and pain. In these verses here that we're going to read all the way to verse 43, we're going to see God's attitude towards suffering. We're going to see God's response towards suffering and what our response should be when we suffer. What is our response usually when we suffer? God, why me? It always happens to me. What should our attitude be? That's what we're going to see in these next few verses. Now, I don't care what some people may teach concerning faith and healing. And that is, you should always walk in perfect health. Suffering means that you're living a Satan-defeated life, and if you're suffering, it's wrong for you to suffer. I don't care about how many people will say that, because I know that God uses suffering. He's used it in my life, and he's used it in a lot of other people's lives. God uses suffering often for his glory. It was C.S. Lewis who said that God whispers to us in our pleasures, but he shouts to us in our suffering. And that is so true. And while God uses suffering and uses trials and heartaches and hardships, at the same time, God is concerned. Never forget that. Let's set that as a premise this morning. God is concerned when you suffer. And that is important to understand. You know, one time Philip came up to Jesus and said, Lord, just show us the Father and it will suffice. What did Jesus say? Philip, haven't you known me so long and you don't know who I am? If you've seen me, you have seen the Father. So when you see Jesus Christ touching human beings, you see God touching people. When you see Jesus Christ weeping over Jerusalem, in essence, you see God weeping over the sins of his people. When you see Jesus lifting a person to his feet who's been lame for 30 years, you see God concerned with pain and with suffering. So we get into the story, and first of all, we notice how Jairus came to Jesus. He came by faith. We notice that in verse 22, behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet. And he begged him earnestly, saying, My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live. He came first believing. He came in faith. Now, it was difficult for this guy, I believe, to come to Jesus Christ in the first place. Because he was a ruler of the synagogue, which meant he was the administrator or the head of the church, the synagogue of the Jews, it was a very risky thing and dangerous thing for him to even come to Jesus Christ. We can understand why. The synagogues were closed to Jesus Christ and his ministry at this time. They didn't want to have anything to do with Jesus Christ. He was labeled as a dangerous man, a heretic. The Pharisees had been offended by Jesus Christ because he healed on the Sabbath. He took the disciples in the grain fields and they ate corn on the Sabbath. And the Pharisees were offended at Jesus Christ. And so the synagogues had shut their doors to Jesus. They didn't want to have anything to do with him. They kicked him out in the cold, basically. He couldn't teach there anymore. And so we find Jesus Christ teaching out on the mountains and out in the valleys, out on the hillsides. In fact, did you know that the greatest sermon ever preached was never preached in a church or in a cathedral, but preached on a little hillside overlooking a little lake called the Sermon on the Mount? And so Jesus Christ is now out in the open, no longer in the synagogues, and this ruler comes to Jesus Christ, which took faith. I'm sure that he had to deal with pride and prejudice and even embarrassment. Because to be caught with Jesus Christ, being a ruler, he could be put out by the Jewish faith. He could be put out by his family and by his friends. But he comes kneeling at Jesus' feet saying, hey, if you just come and lay hands on my daughter, if you'll just come, I know that she'll be whole. And so then it says in verse 24 that Jesus went with him and a great multitude followed him and they were thronging him. It was risky for him to come to Jesus Christ. Excuse me. And yet at the same time, he was driven by desperation. He had a desperate need. He had to do something. His 12-year-old daughter was at the point of death. And he's not going to let her lie there and die. He will do anything to make sure that she's healed. So he comes to Jesus Christ. Strange noises. Driven by need and driven by desperation. Now, I'm not a parent and I've never had a sick child. But I have seen parents as they look over their children who are very sick or at the point of death. And they're so helpless. They're so gripped with fear and desperation. I've prayed over little children who are at the point of death and the parents just, it's a defeating feeling that they say. I've often heard them say, you know, I'd rather trade places any day than to see my child suffer. That's where Jairus was at. He was suffering because his 12-year-old daughter was there at the point of death. He was driven by desperation. I really believe that when it comes to a desperate need, that people will almost do anything. I think that up to this point, Jairus probably felt, yeah, Jesus is a dangerous fellow. We don't allow his ministry in our synagogue, but I've heard a lot of reports of him healing people. I've seen a lot of wonderful things because of this guy. And now he's desperate, he'll try anything. And people, when they're desperate, they'll go for anything. And that's probably what he was thinking. I remember one time, again, when I was working in the hospital, a lady came in who was sick. She was on a stretcher. I took her into the x-ray room, and on her bed she had a stack of books. I said, what are these books? I looked at them, and one was Scientology, Science of the Mind. The other one was Transcendental Meditation. There was one on Buddhism and Eastern religion. She had everything. She was desperate. She would try anything. And she was looking, she said, during the mean times of before she was in and out of the rooms, she was looking for hope. She was desperate. She said she'd try anything. That night we got to lead her to the Lord. It was beautiful. But she was at the point where she would do anything because she was so sick. So Jairus comes to Jesus believing. And Jesus says, okay, I'll go with you in verse 24. A great multitude followed him and thronged him. And a certain woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians, she had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather she grew worse. And when she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garments. For she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I will be made well. And immediately the fountain of blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to him, "You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" Now, did you notice here that there's an interruption? He says, "Lord, I have a need. My daughter's sick. Come here." No problem. Jesus is on the way, and he gets interrupted. Can you imagine how Jairus felt at this point? All right, he's going to come and heal my daughter. And then all of a sudden, this woman in the crowd, because there are so many people, come and she touches him. She latches onto his garment. Because in her mind, she says, "If I can only touch his garment, I'll know I'll be made whole." And then Jesus stops and goes, "Who touched my clothes?" Imagine what Jairus, "Who cares who touched your clothes? I've got a need. My daughter's sick and you're worrying who's touching your clothes. Big deal." He's driven by his desperation. Jesus said, "Who touched me?" And the disciples say, "You see the multitude thronging you and you say, 'Who touched you?'" In other words, "Lord, everyone's touching you. The crowd's pressing him. Everybody's touching you. What do you mean, 'Who touched you?'" Oh, how we hate interruptions, don't we? Have you ever, you know, you go in one direction, you're headed in one direction, or you've got a project and you have so many interruptions, you just get so frustrated. You wanted it to work out so well, and there's so many interruptions, you just, oh man. It didn't seem to bother Jesus all that much. It sure bothered Jairus, I'm sure. But boy, interruptions, you know, everything's going good and then an interruption. Oh, I knew it would happen. A few years ago, we were on our way to Israel. Everything was working out until we got to London. There was a delay. And so we stayed overnight in a hotel and the plane left the next morning and the bus people said, "Okay, we're going to be there at 8:00 in the morning to pick up your people, take them to the airport." The bus came and everybody fit inside the bus except me and all of the luggage for everyone else. So the bus people said, "Don't worry, we'll send a cab along." Well, I waited, and I waited, and I waited for about an hour and a half. Then the cab finally came, wires got crossed up, and anyway, they took me and the luggage to the airport. And inside I was seething, oh man, I hope I make it. And they go, "Don't worry, they'll hold the plane over." So I get to the airport, which is about 30 miles out of London, and the airplane is still there, a big 747. All right, they waited. Now imagine what all these people were thinking as their luggage is with me, and they're on their way to Israel. So I get into the airport, and I'm all excited because the plane had delayed a half an hour before its flight. I got into the airport, and I got right up to the counter, and I said, "I'm the last guy that you've been waiting for, and here's all the luggage." And they said, "I'm sorry, we've already given clearance for them to take off." I thought, "What do you mean you've given them clearance? You've already let them lay over for 35 minutes, and here's, I just came." "I know, but once you give them clearance, you know, you got to let them go." I thought, "That's stupid. I've been here with all the luggage, and they've been waiting, and they're going to go overseas thousands of miles just for 1 minute delay. Just, you've been waiting all this time. Why not wait another 5 minutes? I'm sorry." Man, I was seething inside. And so were the ladies who left all their nightgowns and toothbrushes with me in the luggage. But you know, Jesus really wasn't concerned by interruptions. It didn't really bother him. He didn't say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I'll get back to you in a few minutes. I have another appointment." He was there and he healed the lady. Now, what was wrong with this lady first? She had an issue of blood for 12 years, which meant she had a vaginal hemorrhage, which caused extreme pain for 12 solid years. Because of this blood condition, it meant that she was ceremonially unclean as a Jew. She couldn't come near any Jewish person. She was kept at a distance. So can you imagine how she felt when she touched the hem of his garment and she was healed? She was excited. It was beautiful. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever experienced a true physical healing, but I have a few times, and I know the feeling after you've suffered an affliction for a while to be healed instantly. Man, you jump up and down, you go bananas. She was instantly healed. There was an interruption, and Jesus dealt with the interruption and healed the lady. But what about Jairus? Jairus is probably in the background going, "Come on, until the point that she was healed. I am convinced that Jesus Christ healed this lady, not only for her sake, but for Jairus' sake. Can you imagine what Jairus thought when he saw this? He probably thought, wow, he can heal. He probably came to Jesus with a little apprehension. I've heard a few things about him. And now there's this delay, this interruption, and he's going, oh, come on, who touched my clothes? Who cares? And then all of a sudden, she's instantly healed, and his faith just zooms. It exploded at that moment. There's hope. Now, he had just seen a lady who had an issue of blood for 12 years be healed. And his daughter was 12 years old who was sick. And he thought, oh, my daughter who's 12 years old can surely be healed if this lady who's had a disease for 12 years can be instantly healed. So I believe that Jesus Christ used this interruption as a booster shot for his faith. Because he first came to Jesus Christ with a little mixed feelings, a little bit of faith, but apprehension. Lord, I want you to heal my daughter, but I'm sure he was apprehensive. And now he witnesses a healing and his faith is boosted up. He's ready to go. It's a beautiful kind of a feeling. There was a man who came to Jesus Christ one time who had a little boy who was possessed by an unclean spirit. He said, Lord, my son has been this way from birth, and he throws himself in the fire and tries to kill himself, cuts himself with stones. And Jesus looked at him and he said, you know, if you have faith and you believe, all things are possible to him that believes. And you know what he said to Jesus? He said, Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. He was honest. Lord, I believe, but I believe this much of me I don't believe. I believe, but I'm mixed in my feelings. So Lord, I believe, but help that portion of unbelief. And I know what he was going through. I remember a friend of mine came over to my house years ago. He got in an accident and his hand was, the nerve had been severed and his hand was together like this in a tight kind of a claw from an accident. And he had fallen away from the Lord, and that night he gave his life back to the Lord. He was in my house, and he was laying in his bed, and I began just to pray for him, just to myself. I said, Lord, you can do anything. I just pray that you would heal his hand. You don't have to, but I just pray that you would heal his hand in Jesus' name. And I just began praying. I didn't really have all that much faith. I had faith and unbelief mixed. Lord, I believe a little bit. Yeah, you can heal. So I just began to pray for it, and not really expecting anything. All of a sudden, he jumped out of bed, turned on the light, and started going like this with his hand. I went, wow. I looked at my hands and went, wow. That's pretty good. Bring him on in. Line him up. Man, my faith was boosted after that. A new ministry. And when I prayed for him, I felt, oh, it's not, nothing's going to happen. And boy, after that, my faith was just lifted up and I was boosted. And here's Jairus. He came to Jesus, faith, but mixed with apprehension. Now there's an interruption and Jesus healed this lady. And he thought, man, it's going to work. It's great. And now notice what happens. He looked around to see her who had done this thing, but the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to him, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. So Jairus is thinking, yeah, all right. Now look at this, verse 35. But while he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, your daughter is dead. Why do you trouble the teacher any further? Wow. He had so much faith and now his faith is being challenged. He had so much faith, and imagine what a blow this was to him. First coming in faith, then seeing Jesus heal a lady right before him, boosting up his faith, and now all of a sudden, hey, your daughter's dead. Don't bother Jesus any longer. He was so pumped up, and now he's so deflated. You know how often others sometimes discourage us, don't they, from our pursuits of God? Have you ever been discouraged by others when you're pursuing God? You know, there's an area of your life and you're just getting victory over it and you're just getting strong in it. And you see God moving in an area and you're just getting strength in a certain area of your walk and of your life. And then you go to work and somebody goes, huh, you don't act like a Christian. You go, oh, you know, you thought you just rode over that one. You had victory over that one. Or that you go home and they go, oh, you haven't changed a bit. And it just wipes you out all over again. Came in faith, and all of a sudden, the man comes and says, your daughter, notice what he says, is dead. And notice what else. Why do you trouble the teacher anymore? Huh. How helpless he must have felt. See, before he was facing disease, now he's facing death. Oftentimes, you'll see in an emergency room a common occurrence. They'll bring a person in who's had a heart attack. They'll bring him into the emergency room. Everybody's frantic. The doctor calls for the medicines, calls for the paramedics, calls for the nurses, gets things, and it's just real quick. Everybody's working hard to keep the guy alive, to get him revived, working and working even for hours. And then the moment comes where the doctor says, he's gone, he's dead. Everything stops instantly. The syringes are put down. People take a sigh and they walk away because death has set in. Now there's no hope. It's over with. You know, at first there's a glimpse of hope and you're working on the person and all of a sudden, he's dead. Let's give up. So Jairus is at the point where he was given up. There was no hope. He says, your daughter is dead. I can imagine how he felt. I can imagine because a few years ago, one evening, my parents received a phone call from a hospital. They said, come on down, your son Bob has been in a terrible accident. So they went to the hospital, full of apprehension. They walked in and they waited and waited in the emergency waiting room. The doctors and the nurses were working, and then the doctor came out and he said, Mr. and Mrs. Heitzig, I'm sorry, but your son has died. And I have never, ever seen my parents so helpless in all their lives. Just, there's no hope. There's nothing we can hope for anymore. He's dead. He's gone. And I'm sure Jairus felt that at this moment. He had such faith and it was challenged. It was no hope anymore. Oh, he's dead. Some of you have felt that sense of finality when you've stood next to a coffin of a loved one. Because it's all gone. There's nothing left any longer. There's no hope for bringing him back. And Jairus felt that at this moment, that little shred of hope that he had for a miracle. You know, he's going to do it. I saw him heal this lady, was now gone. But now I want you to notice something else. He says, your daughter is dead. And notice, why are you troubling the teacher any longer? Have you ever heard those words before?